You are now listening to WBPPR, Big Pretty Public Radio. The following program has been brought to you by Comedy Festivals. Ever curious how much a city is unaware of its comedy scene? Try a comedy festival. Karate. It's not only what we teach, it's also the name of our business. Just look for our sign with vaguely Asian-looking letters that say Karate. And rich people who would prefer not to pay taxes. And now, an evening with the authors. I am your host, Dana Glass. Welcome, loyal listeners, to another edition of An Evening with the Authors. Some of you may be wondering what happened to our last episode, as it seems we were replaced by a completely different show, not fitting the format of this one whatsoever. Well, you're right in that description, because it wasn't our show, as our producer Natalie, seemingly through an act of defiance towards myself, or perhaps just a manifestation of her complete and total incompetence as a leader, caused the error to occur. I could say that accidents do happen and that I am not disturbed by this to the core of my being, but that would be a fallacy and not what I would like to perpetuate at this time on air during the program. Now you may be wondering if Natalie and I had stern words exchanged for this error, and the answer would be no. No, of course we did not, because I have not seen her since. She is not in studio today, so it's left me and intern Marley to run the show in place of the person who should be in charge, making a salary far greater than mine. Let us not waste any more time talking about the past, when we can be focusing on the episode at hand. And let's dive right in, loyal listeners. Nigel W. Limespith is a prominent critic of holiday traditions and pagan influences. In his 2006 book titled The Blind Pumpkin Carver, he argued against the use of squash as a method of deterring evil spirits. This book put his name on the map as one of the first outspoken anti-holiday traditionalists of our time. He has since written several popular books such as The Sleigh Ride Position, Santa Claus in Theory and Practice, and Luck is Not Great, How Leprechauns Poison St. Patrick's Day. He makes regular television and radio appearances predominantly discussing these topics, now with an excerpt from the Northumberland bestseller, The Easter Bunny Delusion, Nigel W. Limespith.
Thank you all for being here tonight. I'd like to read an excerpt from my book, The Easter Bunny Delusion. Get right to it. I shall hop to it, as they say. I'd like to make it perfectly clear that my book is not intended to offend, but to edify the reader. Yes, now what I'm about to say may shock you. It may incite you to anger. You may wish to strike me, but I must tell you this for your own good. The Easter Bunny is not real. Some of you are taking this better than I expected. It simply does not exist. What I find fascinating and yet troubling is the overwhelming support that emboldens such a ludicrous belief. Doubtless, it would shock any sensible person to enter a Walgreens or any various supermarkets in the months of March and April, It truly confounds me that so many people don't realize those bundles of green grass for sale aren't grass at all. They're plastic. They've been scientifically proven to be plastic. Perhaps you've all read this book already. In which case, thank you very much. Its only purpose, as you all know, is to get brainwashed people to spend their hard-earned money so that Mr. Walgreen may live an affluent lifestyle with no responsibility of his own. He wears expensive suits and drives fancy cars, all the while millions of Easter Bunny believers show up in droves to dish out cash in exchange for eggs, which, may I add, turn out only to be made of chocolate. All the while, never actually seeing this Easter rabbit fellow with their own eyes, and yet this scam doesn't seem to trouble anyone. How can mankind move forward in the 21st century if so many people think that you can buy a sack of gold coins for £1.6? I'm here to say enough. It is every person's duty to peel back the proverbial gold foil and discover that they've been swindled into purchasing confectionaries. I suppose that the most appalling, disgusting atrocity is that Easter Bunny fanatics are encouraged to, and indeed do, take the very visage of the Easter Bunny formed in chocolate and consume its body. Perhaps primitive man in their barbaric zeal would consume creatures to absorb their power, but this is the 21st century! Most are blinded by a sugar rush, but a sensible person can see the melted chocolate dripping off the corners of a child's mouth while the Easter rabbit in a bow tie is being voraciously destroyed bite by bite. It's more than inhuman, it's truly horrific that anyone would knowingly partake in such a barbaric, outdated, cannibalistic practice. Even so, some may know about the great confectionery conspiracy, but they still worship this fictitious animal. Fictitious! We're all on the same page then. The Easter Bunny is arguably the most unpleasant character in all of fiction. Jealous and proud of it. A petty, unjust, unforgiving control freaker. Vindictive, racist, pestilential, megalomaniacal, cunning, selfish, capriciously malevolent bully. Who else would think it fun to swindle people of their money and torture children by hiding food from them? Their children! If a child were to ask me, may I have an egg? I would tell them, yes, yes you may. And then I would give them an egg. I certainly wouldn't disguise it to look like something inedible and then hide it from them in the garden. This is the kind of barbarity I'm talking about here. The Easter Bunny not only does not truly exist, but has a mythos that has permeated, saturated, and poisoned our culture. You've heard of baby chicks and ducklings. You've seen them. Now, a sensible person might ask, what do those have to do with the genus Oryctolagus cuniculus? I'll tell you, not a single bloody thing. And yet, we see greeting cards, marshmallow puddings, and imitation taxidermic versions of such birds. For what? For the Easter Bunny? What troubles me the most is that so many people see no contradiction with the belief in a magical rabbit who tortures children. Confectionaries disguised as something appealing, and a taxidermic chicken duckling. When will these people wake up? There are greeting cards all over the world depicting bunnies with eggs obviously stolen from chickens. It is scientifically proven bunnies do not lay eggs. Look it up. They have them in baskets which their little bunny paws are clearly unable to weave. It doesn't make any logical sense. This evidence should be sufficient for anyone to come to the conclusion that the Easter rabbit fellow does not exist. But many Americans living in the bunny belt have the audacity to knowingly disagree. I'm glad that many of you seem to agree with me. I usually have arguments with It's fine. I mostly do readings for children in libraries. Now, I'll skip to the end. The anti-Easter Bunny view is correspondingly life-affirming and life-enhancing, while at the same time never being tainted with self-delusion, wishful thinking, or the self-pity of those who feel that life owes them fruit-flavored jelly beans. The take-home message is that we should blame everyone who believes in the Easter Bunny itself, not merely Easter Bunny extremists, as though that were some kind of terrible perversion of the real decent Easter Bunny. Voltaire got it right long ago. Those who can make you believe absurdities can make you purchase confectionaries. Thank you. Good night.
What a passionate and detailed work. Such energy spent on such an unnecessary subject. Moving on. Incumbent Mayor of Brunch, Heather Twain, has been the Mayor of Brunch since Jennifer bestowed the honor onto her after a delicious champagne flight 3 years ago. Since then, she has reserved brunch tables for as many as 9, ensured your mimosas were boozier with no added surcharge, and really just made brunch pretty great again. Now that she is up for re-election, Miss Twain will present her campaign speech. I don't see how this really fits the format of our show, as this is not a book, but rather a speech that we will listen to. Sounds like propaganda. Sounds like another work of my fantastic producer, Natalie. At any rate, please enjoy Miss Heather Twain.
Hey guys. Hi, my name is Heather Twain. It's election day, and I am here to offer you my speech for re-election as Mayor of Brunch. Mayor of Brunch. Now, I know some of you aren't in the friend group, and that's okay, but I promise to include you among our exclusive group if you promise to vote for me. I'm usually uncontested every year, but this year, Stacey Marlowe is thinking of taking over, and honestly, like, what the hell, guys? What the hell? What the hell? What is that even? Okay, so like, for those of you that don't have friends and don't go to brunch, the mayor of brunch is responsible for a lot of important things. Firstly, the mayor of brunch initiates the brunch spot rotation and has ultimate veto power. So like, we hit the same 5 spots, Petit Chou, Padded Chou, Milk Tooth, Garden Table, and Cake Bake. It's in a rotation, okay, guys? And these establishments are worthy of the friend group. But my opponent, stingy Stacey Marlowe, has offered such appalling suggestions as Good Morning Mamas, Northside Kitchenette, and Three Sisters. Like, under the guise of changing it up. I am sorry, but unless a special Nitro Coffee Brewery and Bistro is opening up, we aren't going anywhere else. Am I right? Tell me I'm wrong. I'm not wrong. All right? I mean, she thinks that adding honey to steel-cut oats is an adventure. Okay, guys? No. The mayor of brunch also determines the time that we go to brunch. My opponent, selfish Stacey Marlowe, is a notorious early bird. I mean, just look at the timestamps on her Insta stories, okay? She wakes up at the crack of dawn and brushes her long, natural blonde hair, and she's singing along with the birds, and no matter how much she's had to drink, and she's a fucking freak, okay, guys? She's a freak. I'm normal, okay? I'm normal. And during my mayorship, we have happily seen a steady uptick in our brunch hours. And I've even managed to reserve spots as late as 1:30 p.m. 9 a.m. isn't brunch, it's breakfast, and I aim to keep it that way. Yes, yes. See, she gets it. They get it, okay? During my time as your current mayor, I have developed careful and delicate relationships with various parties. This includes seating hostesses, bartenders, and the cops. Case in point, I'm kind of friends with benefits with an IMPD officer that I met at Brothers, and I haven't gotten a DUI since. If you elect me as your mayor, I will try to ensure these benefits will trickle down to you. Trickle. But my opponent, Racy Stacy Marlowe, she sleeps with everyone. She sleeps with all of the guys. Every single one. I mean, you have no idea who she slept with. You don't know. I don't know. She could have slept with anyone. Even an Indianapolis prosecutor. I don't know. You know the same Indianapolis prosecutor that prosecuted away Jennifer's license after her third DUI? Who's put nearly every one of our licenses in jeopardy? I'm just saying. Remember the time she was suddenly thinking of going to law school? I mean, think about it, guys. Think about it. You don't know. I don't know. We don't know. It could be anyone. It could be the Indianapolis prosecutor. Diplomacy extends to the relations of our inner friend group. We all know my drunk superpower is remembering all of the minute details of all of those heart-to-hearts we have in the Kilroy's bathroom, guys. As a keeper of all of the gossip, of all of the drama, all of the secrets, I am the ultimate keeper of peace. I mean, I know that Karen needs to sit across from Gemma, but not next to Gabby, who can't sit anywhere near Amy because she has misophonia, and Amy literally can't chew with her mouth closed because of a jaw thing or something. I don't know. But it's a tough job being the mayor of brunch, but somebody's got to do it, and that somebody is me. And it would be a shame if those secrets should suddenly not be secrets anymore. I mean, I'm obviously very tight-lipped, but I mean, just remember the time my opponent, Spacey Stacy Marlowe, replied all to the group thinking she was forwarding Jennifer's email about having a yeast infection and needing to stay off the mimosas for a while. Can you imagine a mayor of brunch with such lax security measures? Her emails will be the downfall of our friend group, guys. What else is she capable of? You don't know. I don't know. We don't know. They don't know. She could be screenshotting our group chats and sending them to who knows who. Maybe the Indianapolis prosecutor she's fucking. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. It's just not secure. It's just not secure. Me, I have the most secure emails. I mean, I did get catfished that one time, but it's totally different. Not the same thing. As your mayor, I've made brunch pretty great again. But if you reelect me, I promise to make it even better than great again. It'll be the best brunch. I will promise to check that avocado toast is on the menu of every restaurant in the restaurant rotation. I know I haven't been super great on this in the past, but if you elect me, I'm going to try to make sure that there are some lactose-friendly options out there. Okay, Donna? My opponent, celiac Stacy Marlowe, is trying to shoehorn some vegan-only options so Kendall can come to brunch with us. That's just asking way too much of you, and I know that. Okay? Oh, and since I've got like 7 more of these pitchers at home, I will celebrate my reelection with a pre-brunch, pre-game at my place this Sunday. And then I will make my famous post-brunch Pedialyte Bloody Marys. How does that sound? Sounds great, I know. So, vote for me to make brunch stay the same, but better again.
Well, loyal listeners, that is over, and that is all I have to say about it. After years of the Parker brothers protecting the identity of the iconic Mr. Monopoly, Milburn Pennybags is ready to speak out. From making his millions to being the inspiration behind Monopoly's mascot, the autobiography of Pennybags is a must-read. Now, reading a selection from Free Parking, What's That? The Story of How I Showed People Their True Potential and Found Myself in the Process, is Milburn Pennybags.
Mr. Monopoly is a myth, they would say. A made-up character. A mascot. Parker Brothers would go on and fan the flames that he is nothing but folklore to protect the identity of the esteemed figure they had based it off of. My name, Milburn Pennybags, was associated and occasionally used, but people never put the pieces together. They joked that the character was designed after J.P. Morgan. That softy lacked general common sense when it came to business, paling in comparison to me, Milburn Pennybags. I wasn't always as wealthy. I began my life in an orphanage. No papa, no mama. But I, Milburn Pennybags, pulled myself up by my bootstraps and started paving a way for myself at a young age. The nuns at the orphanage would serve a set of bowls of oatmeal, set numbers at a time, and if I happened to get there first, they were all mine. No, not to eat, you silly geese, but to bargain and barter with as I pleased. I had an oatmeal monopoly. I was able to top the orphanage's inner circle easily. When I was older, I went on to buy that orphanage. Because I'm a smart businessman, I told the state I had converted it into a prison. I could teach the kids a good hard lesson and make a profit at the same time. I let them keep the prison wages. But what kind of example would I set for them if I didn't teach them about business at a young age? I needed to tax them for their wages. Of course, the state started sending us real prisoners. And while I should have seen my profits rise, the orphans kept on killing them. Someone could have had a financial mess on their hands if they hadn't burnt an orphanage down. Collecting on property insurance and 23 life insurance policies. Shh. Shortly after the heads of Parker Brothers heard about me, a self-made millionaire who started out perilous. What a great icon, they said. So we began meetings on how to bring Monopoly to more families. In the discussions, I was the idea person. I wanted to have a jail in the game. I originally suggested several, but we came to agreement of at least one. Get out of jail for free, God, that's lunacy, is what I told them. They said that it added levels to the game. I tried to encourage them that it would be better if the jail was privatized. And if it were to be a property that could be purchased in the game. But they wanted to make the game easier for children. George Parker came up with the idea of free parking.
Free parking, what's that? How are people supposed to earn money in this town? This game is called Monopoly, not Poverty. They still insisted on putting it in there. The Little Red Hotels weren't always Little Red Hotels. No, I suggested to George and Charles Parker that we make them little orphanages. They said, ooh, I don't know about that. Clearly they were worried they would take too many of my valuable ideas. Me doing all the thought work behind the game. I assured them that it was all right. I explained how lucrative my last experiences with orphanages. Oh, God, George said, clearly floored by my genius. Then they were even more adamant that we not go further with it. They were kind of not wanting everyone to try and copy my ventures, which I appreciate. My greatest impact would have to be the houses. I said, if we have a town, we need whorehouses. They seemed hesitant at first, but I said, if you want people to be loose with their money, you have to give them loose whores. George and Charles looked taken aback. Like, how could they have overlooked a necessity? They said, this is a family game. And like most of my friend circles, I am a progressive one and reminded them that whores have families too. As I was leaving the office that day, the last day of the game planning, I overheard George and Charles talking. No one can find out about him. I told them that I wasn't worried, that my money was safe and hidden away in several offshore accounts. They insisted that it was better this way, that I remain a man, a myth, a legend.
It is often we think we know a story, only to find out we knew nothing at all. Our final author is legendary folk musician Saltwater Joe. He has traveled all over learning and teaching himself music the only way he knows how, on the road. Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, and Woody Guthrie have all said they have at least heard of this man. Some thought he was a mere legend, but we are lucky enough to have him on our program. Playing some music from his songbook, Saltwater Joe, Made from Ocean to Ocean, Here is Saltwater Joe.
Name's Saltwater Joe. If you didn't saltwater know, you best saltwater go. I'm just kidding, you guys are great. They say I've been a big influence to a lot of people out there in music. Jack White, Jack Black. I taught a guy Jack in the blues. Bob Dylan, influenced by me. Pavement, influenced by me. Joan Baez, influenced by me. You may not have heard of me. That's fine. I don't really do it for the money. I do it for the road. I'm self-taught. Have been my whole life. Never took one lesson. Going coffee shop to coffee shop. Just getting enough money to get on the train to go to the next town. So you may be wondering why I wrote a songbook. Well, I'm mighty sick. And I'm gonna die. So this is all I got left. This is my only public concert, and it shall be my own last public concert. So you're in for a treat. And I know I'm known for being one of the greatest American singer-songwriters, from what people say in like Rolling Stones or Pitchfork. But I actually was born in Canada. And my first song is from my roots. What was this, country music? So this first song is Canadian country music. She left me and I became a recluse. Just me, my pickup and my pet moves. I watch hockey alone every day. Is this what life's about? Sorry about my voice. But that's straight street piano right there. Another time, you know, since this is my last concert and all, I may pull out some of the B-sides. 4th of July is tomorrow, if you don't know. Sometimes I don't know what day it is. All I know is the road. But anyways, one writer, Herbert Van Wise of the Hartford Magazine for Children said, this should be the new national anthem. This song came from a lot of pain. It was in the middle of me going through a breakup, but here it is. America's full of freedom. And my ex Erica's full of semen. She is a whore. Bald eagle. Thank you. Well, you're not doing an old man justice. Thank you so much, though. I appreciate it. You guys are great. Now, I've always been playing piano, but, you know, I smoke a lot of cigars. My voice is so raspy, and I made a guitar out of my cigar box. Now, I've got a horrible disease that's killing me. So life ain't lucky. but I'm lucky enough to have the time that I spent with the friends that I've known, such as Bruce Springsteen, John Denver, and another guy. But here's a song that only song I know how to play guitar. It's a slide guitar. I don't know if you guys are used to that. I lost my pick, so I'm just going to use this penny. It's an emotional song. Songs are called Bad Luck. I hit a cat with my car. I broke a mirror too. I didn't get that far. Seven years of bad luck. I spent the first three locked up. Yeah, that's right. I went to jail. The cat wasn't on the street. It wasn't on a trail. I don't blame the system. I ain't no critic. I drove my car through a veterinary clinic. I killed a lot of animals. And I killed some people too. I was pretty messed up on beer. Everybody now. I was pretty messed up on beer. Hey, yeah. I was pretty messed up on beer. I wish my daddy was still around. Thank you. Just a couple more songs. How do you guys like Saltwater Joe so far? Shut up! I'm just kidding. You guys are great. Now you may be wondering, there's not a lot of protest songs you're singing there, Joe. Well, here's one I wrote. It's about diversity. Back in the 70s, it was a real problem. So here's a song called Diversity. Black people, white people, black people, white people, black, 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 white, white, white. When we hang out, it's all right. Let's get together and close this schism. Let's get together and end racism. When we hang out, it's so great. I don't want to play your hate. Let's hang out again and again. Then let's kill the Mexicans. Okay. Back in the 70s, we just wanted a common enemy to really help us out. It's really... Didn't think it turned out the way it did, but... Trump's favorite song. Well, folks, I got one more song. Oh, who's that? Oh, you're in for a treat. You're in for a treat. You know who he is, right? It's Ralston Taffy. Ralston Taffy, everybody. Give it up for Ralston Taffy. This is a goddamn treat. Thank you so much, Ralston Taffy. Ralston, what are you doing here?
I wouldn't be anywhere else. I'm also not booked anywhere else.
Oh, all right. Well, the few of you that may not know Ralston Taffy, Saltwater Joe and Ralston Taffy used to have a band together. Saltwater Joe and Ralston Taffy, the band was called Funnel Cakes. Why don't you show them a little bit of your solo work there, Ralston? God damn it, that ain't art. I don't know what is. Ralston, you know, this is going to be my last song ever before I die, whatever I got. Well, that's not the time. Well, anyways, why don't we play that one song? You know, that song we sang at Bob's Chicken Bunker? That's why they put the cage up. We got that song. Man, we played this song so much. We got our asses kicked every bar we played this song. So I can't imagine a more fitting way than to die with everybody here kicking my ass. And I always wondered why they did it. I don't know why they didn't like the song. So I just imagine it's because I couldn't hit the high note at the end of it. But here's a song from me, Saltwater Joe, and Ralston Taffy called Everybody. There you go. You ready?
Start us up.
Yep, there it is. Everybody I know is gay. If I know you, then you're probably gay, because everybody I know is gay. That guy's a gay, fucking other guys, and that chick's a lesbian, fucking other dykes. He be sucking dick while she be licking click, because everybody I know is gay. Everybody I know, huh, everybody I know, yeah, everybody I know is Glee! Thank you very much. I'm Saltwater Joe, everybody.
That will do it for us, loyal listeners. That was this edition of An Evening with the Authors. I would like to thank intern Marley for helping produce this episode, earning no money in the process, simply doing it for a shared love of this work. I'd like to thank Eric Salazar for providing our theme music entitled Soul Search. I'd like to thank the White Rabbit Cabaret in Indianapolis, Indiana, for hosting our live show on the first Tuesday of every month. I would also like to thank Sellerman's in Hazel Park, Michigan, where we recorded Mr. Pennybag's autobiography. If you would like to see a live performance of An Evening with the Authors, I encourage you to follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Fake Authors, or on Instagram at Fake Authors INDY. That's at Fake Authors Indie. I would like to thank my producer, Natalie, for not showing her face in the studio while I am in such a rage and saving us all a lot of trouble. But more than anything, I'd like to thank you, loyal listeners, for spending an evening with the Authors. I'm Dana Glass, and I am nearing the end of my patience.